Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on this Thursday edition, earthquakes shook Oklahoma yesterday. If you're in the local area, you probably felt those. We had several. What are people's greatest fears? There's a list out. We'll take a look at that. Also, the U.S. soldier is getting bigger, and we don't mean stronger. We have a look at that story as well. And sleep deprivation is becoming a major concern in the U.S. Many people sleep deprived. That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, online, kpcg.fm, and a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Today is Thursday. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondo here today. You guys, we were talking before, you guys felt the earthquake last night. There's a couple of them last day or two. The one I really felt the most, let's see, would have been last night, right before 10 o'clock. Everyone was getting ready to be lights out, and we had the kids down to bed, and then the house shook a couple times, and then here come the knock on the door. I'm so scared. So we were okay, but the kids were a little rattled.
Yeah, it's people over to my house last night for a barbecue, and after about 50 minutes of trying to give them the hint to leave, they're all standing up and just about to leave, and then the earthquake hit and caused another 10 minutes of conversation, But yeah, it wasn't terrible, but it's always neat in the way to feel that, I guess.
It was I don't think there was too much damage. It might have been a report a few places a little bit. By the way, totally unrelated, but I'm curious, what do you do? How do you signal people to leave your house?
Well, I didn't mind them staying a bit longer, but it wasn't that late. But it started with my wife. She's like, well, there's the front door looks very nice, doesn't it?
Wow.
Because people were tired, some of the girls, so
That's very direct.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then
no mistaking that.
Sign. Later on, I opened the door, turned on the light, and sat down on the couch next to my wife, saying, like, the door, I removed one of the obstacles. There's just a very thin obstacle left, which is the screen door, and you can.
So, people would understand.
Yes.
It's time to get out of here.
Yeah.
I typically just stand up and go to the kitchen and do something.
Yeah.
Put a dish or, a cup back, and everyone kind of is like, oh, okay, it's time to. I was just curious. Just wondered how other people did those things.
Yeah, they were close friends, so it was more of kidding around than being serious. If any of the listeners ever come to my house, I'd probably be more polite.
Okay, well, that's good to know. But anyway, back to the earthquakes. They had several yesterday. An earthquake of preliminary magnitude 4.2 hit central Oklahoma on Wednesday night. The U.S. Geological Survey said the sixth earthquake to affect the area in just over 24 hours. Just the other day, we were talking about how it seemed like we hadn't had too many for a while, and then now we've had this, I guess they call it a swarm when you get a bunch. 4 hours later, a less intense earthquake of a preliminary magnitude of 3.5 struck the area in the early hours Thursday. So Oklahoma shaking again a little bit, and the ones here, I guess, are a little different than some of the other ones. We kind of get a loud bang typically, and then maybe one shake or so. But people still think it has to do with the well water from the oil drilling, the fracking, I guess. Don't know. But definitely had some earthquakes there. So that was interesting, and maybe some of the listeners felt that. We talked a little bit yesterday about Michael Jordan. He was at this basketball camp, and the kids asked him questions. So the question that always comes up also is, do you think that LeBron James is better than Kobe Bryant? What do you think he said?
No.
He's going to take Kobe.
He did, yeah. He said, he responded in this way. Would I rank LeBron over Kobe in terms of best of all time? Jordan said, no. There's something about five that beats three. Kobe won five championships. LeBron won three. Although he's been to seven finals or something like that. So that's what Michael Jordan says. That's the hot debate. The greatest of all time in anything you're looking at, whether it's well, sports, I guess, primarily, but, and it's an impossible argument because you don't know unless two people played against each other. And even there, you know, if those two guys played 10 times, I don't know, probably go 5-5, something like that. And it depends on who the teammates are. There's so much to talk about there, but those are the questions. He gets asked those questions every single year, but since he's considered to be one of the best players, that people are always interested in what he has to say. What do you think, Grant? You, LeBron or Kobe, who are you taking?
Well, all around skill-wise, LeBron James clearly has more skills, but I would rather have Kobe Bryant on my team because he's just cold-blooded, and he will just finish off the enemy anytime he feels like it.
Yeah, he's got a little more of that, what they call the killer instinct. So he's not afraid to take the big shots, so that's always a big debate there. Nobody asked where I fit in the greatest of all time for basketball. So who's that? Now, what are you talking about? I could beat LeVar Ball one-on-one.
Didn't you pass for the game winner in basketball this morning?
Yes, in our morning pickup game, I did. I had a couple of assists, so that was good. Those guys, it's amazing how those guys, those former NBA guys or professional guys and whatever the sport is, they have those camps, and they make pretty good money doing that. I don't know if Michael Jordan does it the same way, but since he is such a lightning rod for activity, he typically only has camps with young kids or with really older people. He wouldn't have camps with people that were like could compete with him because they want to always go at him. And I could see why you wouldn't want to do that and get hurt or something like that. So I've heard that like CEOs can go. He's had camps for CEOs where you can have like a fantasy camp with Michael Jordan and pay an outrageous amount and he'll play you. You know, if you're 50, something like that.
Cool. Wow, that would be really fun to do.
And yeah.
Yeah, I think it's nice when you get a little older, you've already done everything. You don't need to have some young guy coming for you. It's kind of past that point for Michael Jordan.
Right, and that's the thing, because everybody would like to say, oh, I scored on Michael Jordan. But yeah, he's 54 now, and he's not the same guy he used to be. But and that's the thing, people don't remember what people were like years ago. It's so funny, even if you go back and look at highlights from like the early 90s on YouTube, it looks like they were shot, you know, with a toaster, as they said. Like, what? Was it that bad back then? It wasn't that bad, but it went to a VHS tape and then it went and it just got worse and worse. But it's funny to look at the old footage, you know, because you see players playing in black and white and you kind of think they lived in a black and white world, like they moved in sort of a herky jerky.
I thought that for such a long time that literally there was no color in the world until finally the cameras could depict that.
Yeah, you know, that's it's always amazing when you see older photos or older footage from a time period that you know of as more of a black and white, and you see the color, whether they added it or they found some footage. It just changes everything. You know, because even like this, recently I was working on this project and I needed some footage of concentration camps, right? That notorious, obviously, black and white footage, but, you know, it was in color. It was a real world, but it was just a horrific world. But still, we think of those things in black and white, but there was color, but we don't see it that way. Well,
even certain footage that is in color, but it's sort of the beginning of the color age of footage, it looks like it's more grainy or less vibrant. And that's not the case. I'm sure they have just as vibrant of color at any age in history as we do now.
Yeah, so it's just couldn't record it the same. There's a report here from the Business Insider, the greatest fears that people have in the world. And not too surprising, I guess, maybe in some ways, but interesting to look at. We'll go from the least to the most feared. 31% of people, they fear most China's power and influence, which is growing. That's interesting. Probably people from Asia. I don't know if the U.S. fears that as much as they probably should, but China's on the move.
Was this Americans or?
I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's just a Business Insider report. I'm not sure who they polled exactly. My guess would be it would be mostly the West, just because I doubt they're polling China, but maybe they are. Tied for that is Russia's power and influence growing. So those are tied. And we have a really good book on Russia and China and prophecy, by the way, that you can get at thetrumpet.com. It's a freebie. And then 35% of people fear U.S. power and influence. Who knows? That might have been from the U.S. the way things are these days. But yeah, right. Like, who's afraid of the U.S. power?
What are we going to do? How inhumane are we?
Yeah, it's crazy. You look at all the world-ruling empires and really the terrifying U.S. Okay. That's why everyone's trying to get here illegally, because they're horrified of what's happening. Right. 39% fear the influx of refugees from countries like Iraq and Syria. That's a legitimate fear, especially depending on where you are. 51% fear the condition of the global economy. Tied with that, 51% fear cyber attacks from other countries. 61% feared global climate change, which was the second highest.
Ugh.
And, I mean, obviously we're not looking at out of 100% here. We're just looking at, I guess, how much fear they have of this particular situation. But that was the second highest, global climate change. And that just highlights that the media is doing their job, I guess, in fueling these fears. Because if you didn't hear about it constantly in the media, who would have ever heard of it? I've never observed it. Other than, yeah, today was a little hotter, tomorrow was a little cooler. Like, I never even cross my mind, actually.
Well, especially since it's twice the amount of people fear climate change more than Russia or China. That kind of shows how much attention I think the stories get in the news. Twice as much climate change as real world events about militarism in Russia and China. So I think that is pretty telling, just how much coverage these issues get, and just how much onus we put on certain things that we haven't really seen happen yet.
Number one fear in the world, 62% fear, at least as far as people polled here, was ISIS. People feared ISIS, which is a legitimate fear, I guess, depending on where you are. I saw today also they found a list somewhere of a lot of ISIS supporters here in the West that are ready to attack if they're given the word. I forget how many it was, but it was a pretty long list, at least a few hundred, I think, if not more. So that is a real fear. I mean, it's just... we've seen a lot of attacks there, whether it's ISIS or it could be any terror group, but certainly something to be concerned about.
ISIS definitely isn't the biggest power on that list, but at the same time, they're the most barbaric, and they're not necessarily confined to any borders. They're infiltrating other areas of the world and carrying out attacks, so you can't really pin down exactly where all of those people are.
Yeah, there's something to be concerned about for sure. Here's a story that's just from yesterday, I guess. It was in Minneapolis. It's kind of a weird deal, unfortunate situation. Minneapolis school building collapses after an explosion. At least, well, I think two people, I guess, so far killed, nine others injured on Wednesday. It was a gas explosion, ripped through a Christian private school in Minneapolis, and the building collapsed. And authorities said there were early indications that a ruptured gas line may have led to the explosion and that it was caused by contractors working at the school. You'd hate to be the one that made that mistake. I can't imagine how you'd live with that. But anyway, bad deal. You do see gas explosions sometimes. Recently, we had the local gas company in our neighborhood digging up a bunch of people's yards and installing some things, so... A little bit of an inconvenience, but at the same time, hey, I'm glad they're out there making sure everything's working correctly, because if you have a problem, you can have major, major issues.
Yeah, it's one of the most terrifying things, because once it explodes, it's hard to stop, especially if fail safes don't work. Usually it happens in pretty dense areas, because that's where a lot of gas lines are, in like schools or neighborhoods. So it's always, usually it's pretty tragic when it happens, and thankfully it hasn't been more carnage, I guess, so yet. But it is always a shame when it happens, and it is just one of the realities of working with that kind of material, is that things like this happen.
Yeah, I wonder if they were even back in school yet, because the numbers aren't that high. So maybe it's just a certain part of the building. I'm not sure on all the details there. They could have been back in session, but you would think the numbers would have been higher. But what a tragedy. I remember when we had, of course, those tornadoes ripped through more here a few years ago, and that did a lot of damage to schools, and that was quite a horrifying night for parents, you know. So anytime there's a tragedy at a school, it's a really bad situation. So that was kind of an odd deal up there in the Minneapolis area. Abraham, you've got a story here about something related to healthcare. We talked about that a little bit yesterday, just how big the healthcare system is and how expensive it is. Before we get to yours, one related note about that. We talked about the fact that the Affordable Care Act is causing, or people are, these insurance companies are raising their premium rates. Health insurers in Idaho request premium rate hikes as high as 81%. So I'm not sure what they started at. Maybe it was lower, but that would potentially just completely destroy somebody's budget. you have any bill, especially if it's, you know, of a little bit, it costs a little bit more, you know, I imagine it'd be a few hundred dollars at least, and all of a sudden you get an 81% increase, you would have to cancel it, I think. And so whenever they talk about the Affordable Care Act, I just think a lot of people are priced out of the market. There's not much you can do about it. Or even if you can't afford it, you got to spend every last dime on it. So anyway, those things are going on as the government tries to figure out what to do there. But you've got a story here about some other situations related to health. It says a study, nearly half of people who use, and let's see if I can get this word right, cannabidiol, which is cannabis. That's just the way they say it, I guess. Products stop taking traditional medicines. So people that are getting on marijuana are stopping their other medications.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting because it kind of covers two parts of healthcare, and that is legalized marijuana, medicinal marijuana, but also the traditional drugs and how they're being affected in the market. And so cannabidiol, it's just a product. It's a very specific product or brand of cannabis that's used and medicinally. And so they found that, and they looked at 2,400 people that have been starting to use it. They found that women are more likely to use it than men, and keep using it, and not just have a limited dosage at one time. And so it is interesting because they found that 55% of them were women, so more women than men, and that most of the illnesses they use or issues they use cannabis for were things like depression, insomnia, joint ache, things like that. So a lot of the reasons for using cannabis, at least in this demographic that they looked at, for a lot more of maybe mental relaxation, mental stress related issues rather than like a physical injury. It is used as like a painkiller, but it looks like most of this is for mental stress related health issues.
Yeah, there is a whole write-up. I haven't really looked at it too much, but it's in one of the recent Time magazines. It's a cover story, and it's on all the antidepressants that people are on. Maybe it's a major part of what the drug companies sell. Yeah, which is, you know, it's always so amazing. Of course, everybody knows, you see those commercials, and you look at the side effects, and you think, why in the world would you ever take those? And it always amazes me that almost every antidepressant medication, one of the side effects is suicide. Like, isn't that crazy? But that's always the way it is. Like, I don't know. I just don't know why that would be. It's the exact opposite of what you're trying to do, but it could cause that. So, but a lot of people are on different types of medications. And but it is interesting. Like you said, a lot of it's kind of a mental health related.
Yeah, and it's interesting because some people do have some kind of deficiency with their brain biochemistry that makes them more depressed. A lot of the times it's nothing to do with that kind of condition. And so with a lot of antidepressant medication, it messes with your brain chemistry. It gives you more of one thing than the other, so it makes you feel good. It has nothing to do with your lifestyle, how you're living, what caused it in the first place. It's messing with your brain chemistry or the chemicals in your brain to make you feel better. And so it's giving you a physical feeling, and because your brain might swing back into a reaction against it, it can lead to ultra depression and suicide. So it's an interesting way of fighting depression, because depression is mental health. Like, it's about things that aren't necessarily physical. And so it's just a strange way to fight it. But with cannabis, they found that 80% of people who use it find it very or extremely effective. And this is both by vaping it or by eating it. So people who have insomnia usually ingest it by eating it. It helps them fall asleep. Both of them give you that high feeling, quote unquote. Depends how much you take. But smoking it or vaping it makes it hit you faster. There are more than 850 brands of marijuana-derived CBD products on the market, and 150 hemp-deprived. So hemp and marijuana both come from cannabis plants. They're just different variations. So that's about 1,000 different brands people can choose from in the medical market of these things they can take. And to me, it's just incredible that this is, and the legal rules are kind of fuzzy, but it's just incredible that a lot of people are taking it It's becoming much more popular, and it's starting to butt out traditional medicine like Tylenol, even antidepressants, all these traditional medications people would take for painkillers, that kind of thing. The people are starting to rely more on cannabis to fight those issues. And so you have a situation in the medical market where you have traditional medicine kind of retracting in this field, and you have marijuana becoming more popular, but they both have terrible side effects, especially on the brain for marijuana. If you indulge in it too much, it can be addictive. And so it's just a weird place we found ourselves with the medical industry, where we're starting to espouse drugs, and it's becoming so such a cash windfall that I don't think anything's going to stop it from becoming fully legalized in any way, because these drug companies are losing money, and so they're going to jump on board with the cannabis to try to make up for it.
Yeah, and it's like anything, you know, check back in 20 years and see what happens to people that do that. Because the idea, if you don't look into it much, I think the general idea is that it doesn't affect you too much. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, it makes you feel better, but there's no side effect to it. But as we've talked about before, it's just the damage it does to your lungs is more impactful than cigarettes.
And yet there's a war on cigarettes.
Exactly.
I can't even figure that out. There's pretty much only the one effect of cigarettes on the lungs, and yet marijuana is five times worse on the lungs than it is than cigarettes are. And that's not even the only side effect that marijuana has. It's strange that we're actually recommending something far more destructive like marijuana that actually changes the chemical components of the brain.
Yeah, and there's been studies about car accidents resulting from, say, marijuana, and they just don't know. I mean, there probably isn't a large enough sample size and enough time to really know exactly what happens to everybody. And of course, it's been talked about for years as a gateway to other drugs. It's not like, it's like any time you start breaking any type of law or whatever, where do you stop? You know, if this is okay, why isn't this other thing okay? And then where do you end? Where does it end? And what happens to, what if you run out of it? Even, for example, that happened in Las Vegas, right? They ran out of it. They had to declare a state of emergency. You know, if people need it or they think they're hooked on it and it's not there, what do they do? You know, you look at the prison system, it's full of people that because of drug offenses, maybe not marijuana necessarily, I don't know, probably more hard stuff, but still, the results just haven't been good.
Yeah, exactly. Even in this very limited time frame, we've seen it legalized in some states. We've already seen it have a pretty big effect on society. And it's very easy to get your hands on it because the diagnoses for it aren't necessarily that rigorous. Like for stress or depression, that sort of thing, it's easy for young people to get their hands on it if they want to use it for more recreational purposes. And so the other part of it, too, is that we already have a pretty long track record of what happens when we use drugs and medicine, especially addictive ones. With laudanum, back in the when that was popular, became very addictive. A lot of people became addicted to it, and it's just a painkiller. We have the opioid epidemic, which is prescription drugs, and people get addicted to them and overdose. That's a huge problem affecting the United States. And so I think it's very foolish to think that we can control marijuana use when there's already a large portion of the population who is addicted to it. They have, or they use it illegally. And so they'd be fooling around with this. It's just opening the gateway for disaster because there's already a long track record of how prescription drugs are destroying society. And so when you kind of combine an illegal drug into a legal drug, it just makes it so much worse.
Yeah. And there was a story the other day about a doctor got killed because he wouldn't prescribe an opioid to somebody. They came back and killed him. I also saw that banks right now don't want anything to do with the marijuana money because that legal, illegal world is kind of blurring there. So it is causing a lot of interesting situations. And also, when it's legalized and when it's around, kids are going to get into it. How productive do you think, say, a teenager is going to be in school and whatever else he's trying to aspire to in life if he's hooked on marijuana? I mean, when I grew up, they had all these commercials about stay away from it, you know, and it told you all the effects, and they just gave up on that now, and now it's a free-for-all. Did something change? Is marijuana better for you now? Were they lying to us back then? I mean, what happened?
Well, I mean, when I was in high school, I had friends who were hooked on marijuana. I can tell you they did not make the dean's list at graduation. And most of the times their lives fell apart after high school in many different ways. And so it doesn't lead you on the path to excellence or anything like that. In fact, even it's what it does to your mind is the exact opposite. It leaves you blunted. It leaves you in a kind of a listless state. And while that might take the edge off of physical pain, it removes your mental potency to just to think and reason and problem solve. And so it's, I'm sure more of this will come out as time goes on, as we get more evidence of it. But just from my own personal experience of young kids in high school, and they should be looking forward to the rest of their lives, they've already ruined it because of marijuana.
Well, sure. I mean, if you get on the track of you have to be medicated to exist day in and day out because of mental issues, are you really living? You know, I mean, do you have any will to solve any problems anymore? Probably not. So anyway, that's what's happening. That's a study that you had there. Nearly half of people who use some of those cannabis products stop taking traditional medicines. Here's one that's just humorous to change gears here a little bit. I saw this thing today. I thought it was kind of funny. The oddest road sign names in the United States, according to, whoever put the list together. You know, you see some road signs sometimes. You think, what? Why do they call it that? This road is called Quite A Road. That's the name of it. Quite A Road. Location is in Lovell, Maine. So I don't know why. We don't know why it's Quite A Road. There's another road with the name, it's called Shades of Death.
Wow.
That's in Warren County, New Jersey. So I don't know what that means.
Avoid that one.
Avoid the Shades of Death Road. Yeah. Roast Meat Hill. That's in Killington, Connecticut. They say they think the explanation behind the name, which is unverified, is that there was a barn at the top of the hill which burned while the livestock were still locked inside. So it just got the name Roast Meat Hill. So, you know, sometimes I guess things happened years ago and they named the roads after it. Wits End, that's in Andover, New Jersey as well. So a lot of these are in New Jersey for some reason. Wits End Road. Once you've come to your wits end, then that's where my house is. And this one I just think is funny, and I don't know why. It's in Deer Lodge, Montana. The name of the road is, or it's a lane rather, Pickle Dog Lane. And I don't know what that is.
I don't want to know the history behind that.
What's the history behind Pickle Dog Lane? So anyway, those are some of the funny road signs that are out there. I saw one the other, I'm trying to think what it was. I saw one the other day. I mean, I can't recall what it is. But you see some just odd road names and you think, why did they name it that?
Well, don't people who live in those neighborhoods have some sort of a say over what the roads are called? If the roads are in a neighborhood, you would think that maybe some of those people were just messing around,
right,
and recommended something stupid for their road sign.
Yeah, just to mess with people and to be funny, I guess. So I had my aunt lived on Owl Lane, which you think, well, who lives there? Thank you.
There's a Blondeau Street in Winnipeg, Manitoba, I think. I've never been there, but I think my family used to live in Winnipeg, and they, I think there's a picture of it somewhere in our family archives. Wow. In Fort Knox. But there's, in Israel, the funniest signs, there were two, and they're not like road signs, they're, or street signs, they're like road signs. There's one that says Narrow Shoulders.
Uh-huh.
And Dangerous Curves. And every time we drove on there, we're like, what does that mean?
Yeah, I was perplexed by the sign that says slow children playing.
Yeah.
Like, are they just not fast, or what's, why do I need to know that?
Why is everyone who live here move in slow motion? Yeah. What's going on?
So they're our funny. There was, actually, my neighbor puts a sign up in their yard. I think they bought it somewhere, I'm assuming. I've never seen it before, but they put it in their yard, and it says, drive like your children live here. Which I'm like, okay, fair enough. You know, they want people to slow down. But I was thinking, if I drove like my children live there, I'd pull into their driveway every time.
Yeah.
Just gotta check in on them.
I should, yeah.
Gotta make sure they're behaving.
Trying to follow the advice of your sign here, but so anyway, some of the funny signs that are out there. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program coming up in a bit. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Richard Palmer today from Edstone, England. And check out thetrumpet.com, America's Expanding Warriors. We're going to talk about this one later. This is Abraham's write-up. Why are we so fat? That's a related story, and America's war with obesity. So anyway, some interesting write-ups there at thetrumpet.com. Check it out. Grant, you've got a story for us here from Breitbart. A report, Al Gore's home burns 34 times more electricity than average U.S. household. Can't be so.
Yeah, it was hard to stop laughing at this one.
It's all wind and sun power, though, right?
And he has the what are those credits that he buys, carbon credits,
oh, that's
to make
true.
Up for it.
Yeah, as long
so
as you
it's
buy
totally
the,
fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, the National Center for Public Policy Research had a report. I guess they just collected public records, and they found out that he does, in fact, use 34 times more energy than the average American household. And even if you're comparing him to an entire large American family, he's using the amount of energy in 1 year that American family would use in 21 years. Wow. So pretty outstanding. Even his pool alone uses as much energy as 6 American households would in a year.
What? You know, and the funny thing about it is if you got a big house, obviously you're going to spend more on energy. And that doesn't really bother me at all. But the irony is when you're out there beating the drum about climate change and telling everybody to watch what they're doing, obviously people are going to look at what you're doing, and I guess some people are.
Right. I'm not trying to stir up any discontent toward rich people, actually. I like rich people, and I admire how they got to where they are. This has nothing to do with that, but he is certainly making a lot of money telling other people to do things that he is not doing himself. He's worth over $300 million, basically from his corporate speeches, from the documentaries he's made about climate change, the books he's written. He's got that new movie, An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, coming out, and apparently there's going to be a last-minute edit of that showing President Trump withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accords.
Oh, yeah.
So he's just continuing on with his ways of lecturing others to do what he is not doing. This is only for his house in Nashville, Tennessee. He also has a penthouse in San Francisco, and he has another farmhouse elsewhere in Tennessee. So 3 homes. We're only talking about one of them. And just the amount of energy that he uses is astounding. $22,000 a year he spends on his energy bill.
$22,000?
Yes.
Wow. That's quite a bit. They do try to, I know here, like locally, they do the smart hours thing. I don't know if that's a national thing or not, but where, you know, they try to, if you sign up for that, you try not to run, you know, your electrical appliances, air conditioning and stuff between 2 and 7 in the afternoon, and then you get a cheaper rate the rest of the day. You know, to try, because that's obviously when the biggest pull and demand on the power is. And so, you know, I think people are trying to do what they can to limit some of those things. We all want a cheaper bill, but it is just interesting. A lot of the people that, say, make documentaries about whatever it might be, climate change and so forth, if people care to take a look at what they're doing, typically they're not leading by example.
That's so true. It's just astounding to think that he could be living this way so shamelessly when he is lecturing everyone else on how to live. I saw there's plenty of plans like that. There's another one I saw where you get free electricity, like air conditioning, all night if you use solar power all day. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely certain plans like that. It's probably almost guaranteed that Al Gore is not utilizing any of those plans. And it's not just to attack him. Like you said, there are plenty of people who are hypocritical, especially if you're talking about some sort of leftist ideology. They tell people what to do, and they don't do it themselves. No one is mad that they've made a good amount of money for themselves. It's just a matter of being hypocritical. That's just one of the hardest things for others to deal with.
Yeah, and I think they actually kind of do a disservice to their cause when it becomes so politicized. I mean, trying to find a more efficient way to have energy or use energy is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth looking at, and it's worth exploring. But when it's done in sort of an aggressive, attacking way, it just makes it to where you have to kind of have a reaction one way to the argument. Either you're fully on board with them and you're sort of rabidly in agreement, or you take the other side where you say that's ridiculous. But probably the best thing is right in the middle somewhere. Like, yeah, we should try to have, you know, as be resourceful with our energy and all of those things. Those are great things. But to try to, you know, attack large segments of the population and then the person doing the attacking is completely living the opposite way, it just, I think it just hurts their argument.
Well, the puzzling part about it, too, is that I don't think anyone would ever just say, well, yeah, dump all the sludge you can find into the river next to my house. No one is thinking, let's just pollute as much as possible and make sure that we don't have any clean water or air left. No one believes that is a good idea, and yet that is how it is presented when it becomes politicized. It's either you're for all of these regulations and restrictions that they are proposing, or you are just hoping that the planet has a catastrophic death.
But whenever they get into these types of very political arguments, you know, different groups kind of all band together. But then inevitably the ideologies start to clash a little bit. And here's an example of that. Because climate change people and animal rights people, you'd probably say those are all, they're all kind of in the same mixer. Well, what happens if there's a study that comes out that says your pet's part of the problem?
Mm.
This has happened. UCLA, they've had a busy summer. They say Fido and Fluffy are ruining the environment, UCLA study says. America's beloved dogs and cats play a significant role in causing global warming. Yeah, you see them driving those old pickups. I always see them on the side of an old pickup. According to a new study by UCLA. So why do they say that these pets, the beloved cats and dogs, are causing, are ruining the environment? They eat too much meat. Too much meat. Takes too much effort to make the meat than the industry to make it for the dog foods and cat foods and so forth. And then they eat it and the whole bit. They say, look, this is going to destroy the environment. So I don't know what the animal lovers are going to do now, because they're going to have a separation here, I think, on their thinking.
Well, I did see the Guardian put out an article a couple days ago was similar to that. I'm not sure it was the same research, but they said that having pets is becoming less ethical. And you should get rid of your cat and dog. Or they say most scientists believe cats and dogs are becoming less ethical. I didn't even read it because it's the Guardian. It's ridiculous. And I saw someone retweet something and say, I think most scientists and ethical people would agree we should stop reading The Guardian. Like, what do you think about that?
Right. I'm waiting for the new study to come out and say that scientists are ruining the environment, you know, or something like that. I mean, these studies just keep coming out. And, you remember a few years ago, it was the cow's fault, right?
Right.
Too many cows. So it's kind of funny because you're supposed to get pets that eat a plant-based diet. Like, so that would be like a
turtle,
right? But have you ever been in an area where there is just uncontrolled amounts of a particular animal? It's a disaster. For example, because they're saying we don't want any meat, so obviously you wouldn't kill an animal, I guess, ever. Up in Wisconsin, deer hunting season, if they didn't have it, there are so many car accidents that happen because there's too many deer and they run into the roads, people get hit. You got to thin the herd a little bit. Plus, who's going to tell a wild pack of dogs to stop eating meat? I mean, they're going to naturally attack and eat because that's what they do. So I don't know if they're talking more about the industry of processing meat and things like that. But still, if you just let everybody run amok, you don't have much of a civilization anymore. You've got wild packs of dogs and cats. Who wants to face that? I don't.
Well, it's just a natural process that the circle of life, as we all learned in Lion King, certain animals eat other animals. Certain animals only eat plants. They all contribute to the growth of plants through manure. That's just how it goes. And if you try to meddle in that and take out one part of the circle, then it's not a circle anymore, and there's not really proper life anymore.
And what do they mean? Well, you didn't read the article, you said, but it's not ethical to have cats and dogs. Like they think they should just be left to roam around.
Should they be killed?
Yeah. Like, what do you do?
From what I gathered from people's reactions to it, it was basically that animals shouldn't be constrained, and that basically that you're a better person if you don't have a pet. Basically, like they found that pets affect your how you treat other things, which I most of the time I've heard the opposite.
What about the comfort dogs, though, that go into the stores?
Yeah, exactly.
What about the industry that makes meat for people? Do we need to have a lot fewer people? They actually are arguing that.
They are, yeah.
They're saying to have fewer kids, and that's actually another way that they're using to support abortion. They're trying to go the route of China where they only allow one person because apparently we have to limit all populations by any means possible.
Yeah. Well, that's the ultimate conclusion they're getting to, right, is if there was no life on this earth, then there wouldn't be any climate problems. But then what's the point of the earth, right? Why is it here?
It's here for us to live on. There's no other reason.
They're taking it a bit far. And again, I mean, there is a reality. There is pollution. It needs to be looked at to some extent, but it just starts to get crazy after a while. Blaming the dogs and cats. They don't know any better. They're just doing what they do.
Well, you can see how there are lots of things wrong with our industries. Everything could be reformed and be a lot better, but we don't. And a lot of it's because we have the wrong reasoning to do so, like climate change. But also, there's greed and other things out there too, and that also, if we were to... That's the thing about Al Gore that befuddled me, is that he's successful because of capitalism, and no one begrudges him earning money and then living his dream. That's kind of what capitalism is about. But what climate change is about to many people is basically dismantling those components that allow you to do that. Because, well, if he can't have a big house because all that money, he has to live in the Stone Age to stop global warming, then what advantage will that give to other nations who aren't concerned about climate change? If we have to bring back our industry or our standard of living, it gives them an advantage. So that's what this is really about. And that's the great irony, is that Al Gore is successful, and that's great. But even how he's living is because of we're not following the climate change idea. And if we were to, it would take away all the wealth and affluence we've had in this country. So it's just a dichotomy. And even in his life, you can see you can't have what they want because it would take away everything that we could aspire for.
And a lot of reports do show how anti-American a lot of the environmental movement is. I saw one recently that apparently Russians are meddling in that whole fracking scare to try to whip up a lot of furor over the fracking part of that industry of getting natural gas out of the ground, because they don't want anyone to be able to compete with them when it comes to that industry. And we've even seen President Trump trying to compete with Russia in that field when it comes to Eastern Europe, especially, so that they don't have to be dependent on Russia anymore for their electricity, for their natural gas. But Russia is directly trying to undermine America and their industry through a lot of these environmental activists.
People that take a little bit of a longer view and are thinking about world domination, which other nations are, Russia and China, Europe. What's the one thing that turned the tide in World War II? American industrialization.
Mm-hmm.
Because we could ramp up the industrialization, the manufacturing to make the weapons, the tanks, all that stuff very quickly, very effectively, and that was the main thing. And so if you were one of those nations, what would you hope to do? Take away American industrialization, right, as fast as you could. And if you could do it by signing some papers, easy. Easiest thing you've ever done in your life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but people aren't thinking about that. You know, people that are really into these reports and stuff, they think we're in a post-aggression world or something where nations don't fight each other anymore. They're crazy.
Well, just look at Al Gore. Like Abraham said, he is thriving in America from embracing an anti-American ideology. It's just befuddling how he could do that and not even realize what he's doing.
He'd have to make his next documentary with parchment and ink quill pen.
I don't think he realizes how much would he have to give up if he really did believe what he was saying.
Everything.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big sacrifice that he, I'm sure, is not willing to make.
Yep. Not so far. Here's a write-up from theladders.com. Sleep deprivation makes us useless at work, it says. So if you're listening to this and you're sleeping and you're at work, shame on you. The National Safety Council released a report based on a survey showing just how many of us are struggling when it comes to getting enough sleep for work the next morning. A whopping 43% of respondents said they failed to get at least 7 hours of shut-eye daily. 97% reported having at least one of the 9 fatigue risk factors that were in the study, to the point where lack of sleep actually threatened their lives. Some have said that they've actually almost had severe accidents, life-threatening accidents, because of lack of sleep. One of the main causes, they say, people are working too long, 12-hour shifts and longer, not taking a day off, and just working 7 days a week, and long commutes, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of other things tie into gadgets, you know, being on the internet late at night and all that. But anyway, there is definitely a sleep crisis in the U.S.
Well, that incentive to make money is a tough one to sort of resist a lot of the time when you know you could work 60 or 70 or 80 hours a week instead of the regular 40 because that's going to make you more money. Well, that's not leaving a whole lot of extra time for sleep.
It totally shoots the moderation in all things principle that the Bible lays out there. So anyway, that's I mean, the funny thing though about it is, of course, is if you don't get enough sleep, and everybody struggles occasionally, but I mean, if it's habitually your lifestyle, you're not effective when you're awake, you know, because you don't focus as well. We all know how that feels. If you get a good night's sleep, you just feel you're just more on the ball the next day. So anyway, that's that survey was sponsored by Red Bull, by the way. NyQuil. So anyway, not enough sleep. Abraham, you've got it right up here. This is the top story at thetrumpet.com today, and it's a really interesting look at the U.S. military and the overall fitness. America's expanding warriors, declining health is threatening national security.
Yeah, this is just a take at many reports. This has been going on for over a decade, I think, especially from military thinkers who have noticed it. And it is that within the U.S. military and in the general population, the obesity levels are starting to undermine our ability to supplant our volunteer force. So America's Army is volunteer. We don't force people to join. And so to volunteer, you have to go through pretty rigorous fitness standards to join up. And especially for some of the more elite selection processes like SEALs, Marines, those sort of things are much more rigorous than basic boot camp. But even the most basic physical fitness tests, PFT as they're called, most Americans are going to fail at, especially when they're in that prime age to join the military. And so I think this is really worrying because we're seeing how general societal trends affect the military in a very dramatic way.
Just, you know, interesting too, you think back to that story you had on marijuana. Do you want a whole crop of young people coming into the military that are addicted to marijuana?
Fearsome force.
What would they do?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, we saw how effective they were in Vietnam in some cases, and it just ruins morale. But that actually plays into this. And this is from Real Clear Defense, Admiral James Hogg. He's an analyst there. He said in 1991, when he retired from active duty, about 50% of nation's young people, the ages 17 to 24, that's the prime age to join the military, were considered eligible for military service. And that's for physical reasons, not like academic or anything. So about 50%. Today, based on data from 2016, that has dropped to 25%. Uh-huh. And so only 25% of people could pass basic physical fitness tests. And so they gave our listeners an idea of how many of that are. There's about 34 million young people in that age bracket, 17 to 24. So that means about 25.5 million young people, male or female, cannot join the military. And so that leaves just about 9 million people we can draw on for the military. And it's just over a million people right now. And so, and it's not just, the Army's not just competing against fitness standards, it's competing against everyone else. Because everyone else wants young people to work for them in the private sector. So the military has to compete against better paying jobs, much more comfortable lifestyles. And so it's becoming very difficult. And so just to give our listeners an idea of what is the basic physical fitness test that these have to pass. This is the most basic one. Everyone has to at least achieve these minimum standards to join any branch of the Army. So here it is. Ages 17 to 21. If you're a male, in 2 minutes, you have to do 35 push-ups. In 2 minutes, 47 sit-ups, run 2 miles in about 16 minutes, 36 seconds. So I think most people think that's pretty doable. It's not over amount. For females, it's 13 push-ups in 2 minutes, 47 sit-ups, and 42 for a 2 mile run. When you go up to the next age bracket, 22 to 26, everything's just slightly a little bit lower. They have slightly lower standards the older you get.
I don't mean this to be as much of a joke as it's going to sound like. What do they do with the transgenders?
Right. Well, that's actually, there was an article on that, and they're not sure. Because if a biological male is saying he's a female, they're not sure which standard to judge him by, because he can switch it. If he can't do the male side, he can switch it to being a female and get into the army. So
it's just confusion.
Yeah, because they're not sure what physical standards to test them by, especially depends how far along they are on their journey. But in any event, that's a whole nother side to the how that's even how females are affecting physical fitness standards. But in any event, that's just the most basic minimum requirements. And then after that, they have to go to advanced infantry school, PFT, which is slightly higher standards.
Are these the same standards they've had for a long time, or has it changed?
It's changed a little bit, but not, that's basically what it's been for many years. The Marines they just changed theirs to where they're actually a lot higher. Basically, this is how it's been for decades. It might change a little bit here or there, but that's basically what it is. And so 75% of young people can't do those basic tests. And it's not just because of obesity. It's also because of drug addiction, other health-related issues. So this is not just obesity, but that's the major issue. And if you look at wider American society, you can see this is a huge problem. About 40% of American adults are obese. 1 in 3 adults are clinically overweight. There's been about a 20% increase in adult obesity since 1970. So it just is just out of control. And even with children. So if you look at the future of U.S. soldiers, what we're expecting, about the average obesity rate for U.S. children between the ages of 3 and 17 is about 20%. So 1 in 5 kids are overweight. So by the time they can join the military, 20% of our future will be added to that 25%. So in other words, that 25% is going to shrink smaller and smaller as the future goes on of how many people are eligible for military service, because the child obesity rate is so high. And so within American society, this war on obesity is proving to be one of the hardest battles the U.S. military have to fight, because besides just fighting our enemies, we also have to try to win this health battle within our own society.
Well, and what I think we see happening in society, at least I've noticed, is that because so many people are in this condition of being overweight, they're trying to shift what's considered normal. Instead of saying, okay, hey, look, you know, you're out of range of what the normal weight is, they're trying to push that a little bit to where, hey, everybody's got a different body type and you love your body. And there's a lot of movements like that. And even the other day, I was doing some back to school shopping with my kids at a pretty major, you know, store, national store. And they have their little advertisements for the kids' clothes and stuff. And I noticed that the kids in the pictures were mostly overweight, because they're trying to not offend and trying to shift the parameters. But the reality is, the truth is, that's not a healthy condition to be in. But because so many people are in that condition, they're kind of shifting that. And I wonder if that'll affect the military to where they'll say, like, well, you've got to shift your standards so people can make it. We're in such a weird time where they're trying to normalize things that aren't normal and make everybody feel good about themselves, when there's just some reality to it, even just health-wise, that too much weight is a problem.
Yeah, exactly. There are two options for the American Army, and that is lower the standards, or they'll have to change the way they take in. They'll have to stop being a volunteer force and maybe enlistment again. It's kind of like Israel, where everyone who is physically fit has to join, because we can't keep troop levels up through volunteer. And no one's going to go for that. There would be a uprising in the United States or something like that. So they'll probably have to lower their standards. In the U.S. Army, the U.S. Army is already overweight anyway. They're having huge problems with obesity in the Army. About 13% of soldiers are overweight in the Army already.
That's stunning because you think of a soldier, you think optimal fitness.
Yeah.
It's stunning. Like, how do you carry out your duties?
Yeah, well, I mean, so these aren't combat jobs necessarily,
yeah.
But there's lots of jobs that are administrative or desk jobs type right. thing, where I think most of these people would be overweight. But still, the combat jobs are the most important in a sense, and if those dwindle down, not everyone can sit at a desk.
Yeah.
They have to be able to go into combat. And so the U.S. Army has this new program called Holistic Health and Fitness, where they're trying to make the food more healthy in military bases and what they feed them. So I think it's a good effort. But basically, unless society changes on a whole, that's not going to be able to fix the issue. And so I think it's just really interesting to consider how American societal trends in many different things affect the Army in the long term, and how there is some historical precedent for this. If you look at ancient Rome, when Roman society became affluent, the men became overweight, more effeminate, all these things. They couldn't join they didn't want to join the legions, or they couldn't. So they had to hire barbarians and people that were unfit for service. And eventually it completely destroyed any chance Rome had of fighting off its enemies. We're kind of seeing that same trend where either we'll have to lower standards and have a lot of unhealthy people fighting for us, or ask other people to fight for us. And that's a terrifying reality.
Yeah, really interesting right up there. So thetrumpet.com, America's expanding warriors, just a sign of the times. So really interesting. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us here at 101.3 KPCG, Kia David Program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Are coming up for myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Urge, and Abraham Blondo. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.